Hello everyone, I'm Tara and we have been talking about social enterprise, various elements of social enterprise, innovation, ideation, business planning, strategies, structures, the various stakeholders, their perspectives, funding elements, demonstrating the benefits of social impact. And now let's talk about the road ahead and the trends in the social entrepreneurship space. In the current landscape, there are about 10 million social enterprises globally, out of which US, India, and China have the largest number of social enterprises. Africa is one of the regions where social enterprises are growing at a fairly steep trajectory, which is not surprising because going forward, it is estimated that by 2050, one in four persons in the world will be from Africa. Also, Africa still has 65% of the world's uncultivated lands are in Africa. So a lot of potential exists out there. So when we're talking about social enterprises, let's keep various parts of the world like Africa in mind as well in terms of what the future holds for social impact and for enterprise. In addition to, of course, countries like India, where we boast the largest number of social enterprises that are in operation, close to 2 million. Now, in terms of certain measurability factors, to give you an idea of the tangible results of a demonstration of social impact, social impact organizations, social enterprises are contributing to almost 3% of the global GDP, which is not insignificant. They are creating employment for more than 200 million people all across the world. So imagine a positive impact on 200 million people because someone went beyond just profitability and chose to focus on people and planets is a massive improvement in the dignity of a fairly good fraction percentage of the global population. So let's see what the future holds. What are some of the challenges? What are some of the elements that one must be cautious of when dealing with social enterprise? So in the Indian landscape, India, in our Indian economy, we have the pre and post-liberalization era, which happened in the 90s. Now we have a rural and urban divide. Even now, more than 65% of our population in India, more than 67% of the population in India still lives in villages. So rural economy still plays a very large role. Having said that, the connectivity between tier 2, tier 3 cities to tier 1 cities with the technological upgradation, with the mobile revolution, the connectivity virtually has improved, leading to a much higher engagement between your centers and your bottom of the pyramid markets very often. In India, we have a conducive environment. We have think tanks like the Niti Aayog, which is holding annual competitions for enterprising ideas, nurturing enterprising ideas. We have the Atal Innovation Mission. We have so many other enabling things which have happened in India to promote social enterprise. We also have a young population, our demographics, which presents a huge potential because it is the younger workforce who are desirous of and motivated to work for social enterprises, to promote social enterprises, because they choose to give up money for this purpose, put purpose before money. So it's a very healthy prospect for the potential of social enterprises, generating employment for the youth, becoming enablers and not just being job seekers, but also becoming job creators, soliciting training, tailor-made training, skill-based training to improve their livelihoods and their lot. As we have seen in a lot of social enterprises across the globe, women empowerment has led to a lot of growth. When we saw the positive impact of Grameen Bank, then it was very evident that with 98% of their borrowers being women, you can see the impact that female leadership, that female empowerment and involvement is having on the impact of social innovation and enterprise. When we spoke about Shaheen Mistry, you saw that she, the female leadership, how inspiring she has been in the spectrum of education for disadvantaged segments of society. And again, you know, she took inspiration from international female leadership like Wendy Kropp, who again is demonstrating how female-led firms are really driving this sector. One, you know, as we have seen in a lot of data, one in two social enterprises are led by women versus one in five in the traditional entrepreneurial segment. Of course, we have seen and spoken about the challenges to capital, challenges to social, the changing mindsets is not easy. There are infrastructure issues. There are various barriers which are challenges which must be improved and which can really help the scalability of social enterprises. So we will be touching more on those in terms of what can be done out there. We should also keep in mind that over and above the focus areas, mentioned, we should also keep in mind that some basic structural decisions are also very key over and above deciding which areas one wants to focus on. A very important key decision for social enterprises is what is this model or the structure they should use. Is it a for-profit? Is it a not-for-profit? Also, we are seeing a trend in recent times from the structural point of view that a lot of NGOs are choosing to transition to a social enterprise model. So where we have NGOs which were not really working on a profit model, but at the same time, lack of funding was constraining their operations, was impacting their scalability growth. So a lot of NGOs are now considering transitioning to social enterprises for various reasons and doing it in a staggered, tired manner so that, they are not becoming out and out, commercial organizations, but at the same time, doing it in a tired manner where still some element of balance is maintained as far as costing, etc. are concerned. For example, if you have an NGO that is providing medical health, free of cost medical services to the poor, to the disadvantaged, and they want to transition from an NGO model to a social enterprise model where they do want to have some sort of revenue model. The revenue could be redeployed back into the business. So, but still revenue needs to be generated. Then they can try to have some sort of layer or choose to have some sort of layer in terms of providing basic, providing absolute free to a certain segment and then having some sort of payment for people who are slightly higher up in the in their target beneficiary list who have some capacity to pay. So that tired system may still work and still be acceptable. Very often we will, even in our own ecosystem and around us, we will see that there are enterprises where we have gone and they have said, you know, we don't have a rate card, we don't have pre-decided charges. We leave it open to the person who is accepting our services, who is benefiting from our services, to pay whatever they can. And they leave this decision of how much you want to pay to you. And chances are that, you know, you would think that, oh, you know, you may think that, oh, why would anyone pay anything? You know, they'd walk off. But that is not the case. When you leave this decision, you trust the beneficiaries. A lot of the beneficiaries who have a capacity to pay end up paying quite fairly, so that the ones who are in the pro bono bracket or who do not have the capacity to pay can be subsidized and can benefit from these services. Likewise, there could be another example, to give you another example of how NGOs are transitioning towards social enterprises. I'll give you another example. Well, let's say there is an NGO that is involved in educational courses for people from the disadvantaged segment. And now they feel that there needs to be a revenue model. And how do they go about attaching a price when, you know, in the past they have not charged these youth coming from the underprivileged areas, and they do not want to make it unaffordable and defeat the purpose of the enterprise. So what they could possibly try to do is that, let's say that they assess and study the companies, the prospective employers in the region in which they are operating, and they observe what is the skill set that one needs, the youth needs, to be able to get jobs with these employers. Assessing and doing your research and arriving at the kind of skills which are needed, let's say this NGO develops tailor-made, skill-based courses, educational courses for those locations, based on the locations, based on the areas. And then the youth is trained on these specific tailor-made, skill-based education and knowledge courses, which help them to get jobs in fairly quickly after they finish their courses. So they enter the earning workforce almost immediately after they finish the courses and get jobs. Then in that case, you can justify charging some amount, maybe a nominal amount, for your paid courses versus in the past where you were not charging at all. Because that revenue which you are receiving will help you continue your operations of training your teachers, of your infrastructure, creating your modules, of various other overheads that you would have, as any enterprise does. So again, a pricing model very well thought out, in a way where there is relevance, where even these students from underprivileged communities do not grudge that payment they have to make for the course, because they know that they will earn it back very quickly post the course, and it is going to be having a long-term, lifelong impact for them because they are getting this employment. Very often, organizations can have not just understand the skills of the prospective employers in the region, but also have tie-ups with prospective employers that we have a tie-up with you, that we will place, that you will hire so many people after they have completed this skill-based course that you require employees to have. And so at the time of joining the course, the student knows that I'm paying this, but a job is guaranteed for me after this. So it's going to pay itself back and much more. So there are various models and motivations why NGOs, why and how NGOs are looking to transition towards more balanced models of social enterprises, so that they can sustain themselves and possibly have a longer lifespan and a more sustained and more sustained scalability. Again, looking at some of the data, a lot of the social enterprises are, of course, for the socially, economically disadvantaged, people with disabilities, children, who are all high-risk communities, who are special needs communities, they are also becoming focus areas. The ease in terms of, even India now is becoming very, very sensitive to, is becoming extremely sensitive to people with disabilities and to giving them access as far as, to various basic needs and amenities, which is their absolute right and which they should not be deprived of. So while, earlier it was more in the West where things were progressive and people with disabilities had access, now people with disabilities having access to a larger forum of amenities, facilities, entertainment, etc., is also a result of a lot of the social enterprise innovation which has taken place. And of course, children, the vulnerable children, young children, impressionable in their formative years, form a very, very high focus group of focus target group of social enterprises. There are various stakeholders who play the role of mentors, who play the role of incubators, who either help in by way of training, assisting, preparing the social enterprise, or help by way of funding. We have seen various, we will touch on a few more. We have, for example, in the Indian context, we have the annual Social Enterprise of the Year Award for path-breaking, innovative, social entrepreneurs. And this is in collaboration with the Schwab Foundation, in collaboration with the World Economic Forum. So a lot of these avenues help in preparing social entrepreneurs to make their ideas more actionable and conducive to launch and success. We had seen funders like, we have seen mentors like the Unlimited, the various other foundations. So there are a lot of avenues, and social entrepreneurs should explore multiple avenues so that they are not becoming excessively reliant on anyone. Having said that, also some sort of revenue generation might help, which might give more flexibility and reduce dependence on funding. But of course, when we saw examples of startups that became very, very large, scalability is very often enabled by good funding. So we have to focus on that element also. We have discussed some of these. If you want to see more on Unlimited, you can go to their site. There is a lot of comprehensive information. There is a lot of demonstrable social impact which is measurable. In the economic sphere of things, we often talk about return on interest, return on equity, return on interest. Well, there is also a concept of social return on interest and being able to demonstrate that through measured benefits, measured impact can really help stakeholders buy into you. So let's say you go to the website of Unlimited India, testimonials, people talking about them, data will show you that social impact, social return on impact has been measured, shared. There is accountability, there is transparency, so that more and more people can be inspired by social enterprise. There is Villigrow, of course, supports innovators in agri, education, healthcare, etc., and also helps to scale up social enterprises. In the rural segment, technology becomes very important. Research becomes very important. Deshpande Foundation fosters innovation, a long-term social impact. As we have been seeing through various examples in the previous chapters, a lot of the IITs, IIMs, IITs have offer incubation, have tie-ups and collaborations with entities which nurture social enterprise. For example, when we were talking about the example of pool.co, which is cleaning the rivers and creating incense and various oils from the flower waste from the removed from the rivers, they received, you know, even though they started out with their own funding of just about 70 odd thousand rupees, they eventually did receive support from IIT Kanpur. They received support from various other entities. So we have seen that a lot of educational institutions have dedicated resources, funds, contests, etc., so that social enterprises are vying for those, approaching those in a structured manner to be able to get resources which can help them scale. A very important element of funding which comes with social enterprise is that it is not simply money funding, but it is money which is coming with mentorship, with guidance. So when we are talking about Unlimited, of course, we are talking about a lot of resource raising which has happened, but there is also a lot of mentoring which has happened, training which has happened, networking platforms which have been provided. So a lot of the funding in social enterprises comes together with this nurturing, with this handholding, which acts as a guide. What do you do with that money? Money is great, but how do you deploy this money, efficiently use this money, allocate this money to go ahead and implement your idea? So very often it comes with assistance on all of these funds. And of course, in measuring the social return on investment, research shows that in India, impact investment is in excess of $6 billion across sectors, agriculture, renewable energy, healthcare, education, etc. And of course, the numbers are constantly growing with the growing creativity, entrepreneurship in our country. So many foundations are there, right from Dell Foundation, Ashoka, Acumen, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, USAID, GIZ, SIDBI. So many of these which provide direct funding as well to Indian organizations. When I talk about government agencies, then talking about government support, there was a development in 2013 when it comes to government agencies, government support. In India, there was a very significant year of 2013 where passing of the Companies Bill happened, where 2% of the profits of a company have to be deployed towards CSR. Of course, there have been a lot of voices about that is not the right way to do it, or there will always be disagreements. However, that has opened up a very large amount of fund and a huge amount of resources for social enterprise, because it has now been etched in the policy that this has to be done. So a lot of benefit can come out of that as well. There are a lot of other initiatives like the Pradhan Mantri Mudra Yojana, which we saw had over 50 crore loans, 50 crore individual loans to the smallest of the small, the bottom of the pyramid. So there is a lot of government support. There is the initiative like India Inclusive Fund allocating resources. So if one looks around, there is policy support. Having said that, one should tap into a lot of avenues where you can have support from private individuals, where you can have support from international agencies, other foundations, because the idea should gradually be to move away from government funding to funding from other avenues, so that enterprise is the private sector is contributing more and more to the enterprise, in to social enterprise right now, versus international landscape within India. A large part of the social funding is coming from the government sector, and ideally one should probably move to the international models of more and more private participation, opening up for funding of social enterprises. Corporates, academia, we have seen across you know, various enterprises that, you know, there are so many institutes which are helping various enterprises, whether it's by way of technology, whether it's by way of funding, whether it is by way of having courses, right from Harvard to Stanford to, you know, IIT, IIMs, having courses on social enterprise. So there is a lot of academia, a lot of institutions where this is happening, in addition to, you know, your regular CSR and corporate engagement activities. Seed funding typically refers to investors who are investing from 15 lakhs to a crore. You know, you have some of the funds like Unitas. These are for early stage fundings. They early stage fundings initially at the initial level to give some sort of support so that they get a push. I had mentioned the Avishkar Fund. There are other funds like Venture East, Elevar Equity. So there are a lot of funds where initially, even if one wants to start small, you can, you know, it doesn't help to become over ambitious and go straight away to the largest funding avenues and then, you know, be rejected. One should look for an equity avenue which is more tailor-made, which is more suited to your current needs. And you don't have to go and access the World Bank and the whatever. If your requirement initially is just about, 10-15 lakhs, then you have so many other seed funding avenues, so many other early stage funding avenues which you could tap into. So it's very important, even when you're looking for funding and investment, that you don't straight away go to someone who might be very difficult to access. There are lot of them who may be a lot more, maybe smaller, but as far as you are concerned, they work for you, because, you know, you get the resources you need, and they may also be far more approachable and easily accessible for you at your current stage of your business. In future, you may grow, and for your scalability, you need to go to the World Bank and whoever else. But till then, for now, you can approach funding avenues which are more relevant to you. You have growth stage funding, which is typically over 7 crores. And there are a lot of, examples of low capital, grassroots, etc. Acumen, that I was talking, Acumen, who is, of course, has a lot of visibility in India because of their investments in Arvind Eye Hospital. When we were talking about enterprises like HumanTix, we saw how a successful enterprise from Australia has moved to Scotland and been successful there, been through an 18-month rigorous vetting process, received the support of the Scottish government. And one of the reasons for that was that Scotland is voted as one of the most conducive environments for social enterprises to operate in. So here, across the world, what is being demonstrated is that regardless of funds, etc., support, ease of doing business is a very important element of social enterprise. So the same way as there have been calls to for ease of doing business in the traditional economy, and countries are actually ranked by, there's an index of where do you rank in the ease of doing business index. Likewise, there should also be a conscious, there should also be a conscious movement to have a proper policies for ease of doing business for social entrepreneurs and seamlessness at the state level, at the central level, so that, you know, the entire processing, the entire implementation is not stuck in red tape. And that can definitely be enabled by impact investors, because they have more of a lobby, they have more of access. So bureaucracy and red tape doesn't exist only in India. It is there all over the world. So whether we are talking about UK, US, anywhere, as we are seeing in all the crazy things happening in the parts of the world, but these impact investors have the capacity and the access to lobby to ensure that things are made simpler for social enterprises, because here it's not even about simply profits. Creating ease of doing business for them is going to directly and speedily create social good for the people and for the planet. So there are various other platforms like the Startup Wave, which is an incubation platform by the UK Department of International Development. So many avenues to have impact investors, donor agencies who can be tapped into for your enterprise, social enterprise, where you don't have to have deep purse strings on your own. You need to have an innovative, solid idea, which is well researched. You have a proper business plan in place. You have your business strategy. You're very clear about your objectives and goals, and then accordingly you approach the multiple avenues for your funding. Other foundations are the Rockefeller Foundation, Ashoka. We have spoken Bill Drayton's Foundation, Nestar, GIZ, DFID. So many avenues are there for social entrepreneurs to benefit from. There's the Lemonson Foundation. So social entrepreneurs should really research, tap into as many, and see where is it that there is a best fit for them and a highest chance for them to get the kind of support that they need. Do they need only money and rest is in place? Do they need money and guidance? Do they need money and mentorship, training, access to network, access to experts, etc.? So they have to accordingly see what their requirement is for them to then accordingly tap the right funding source. Of course, corporations, through their CSR, and now with the 2% being, part of the law, the Companies Act, have to contribute a significant amount. They are doing a lot of good. There are a lot of, projects that they mention in their company, in their annual reports, a lot of information on their websites. You can look those up, and they are not simply just ticking a box because it's a mandatory requirement in the Companies Act 2013, but they are genuinely positively impacting companies, communities for a positive impact on people and planets. There are a lot of online communities, platforms which support enterprise. There is Your Story, Social Story. They publish stories. Yesterday, I had in an earlier chapter, I had spoken about Cozy Aims, which lists, which has a weekly podcast showcasing new entrepreneurs. I had mentioned about the documentary The New Breed, which followed the journey of social entrepreneurs from ideation to implementation. So there are so many inspiring stories which can give you visibility. I started reading about fool.co a very long time ago, and you will see how with the visibility, the funding has come in, more and more funding has come in. With the funding and the scalability, more PR has come in, and then that keeps attracting more and more stakeholders and investments. So your story has profiled more than 15 stories of more than 1500 entrepreneurs in India. So you must tap into all these avenues, because it's not just about creating awareness and communicating, which of course is paramount, but by accessing these platforms, you are also getting to interact with multiples of peers and stakeholders in your segment. You know, you would end up interacting with experts, you will end up interacting with other social entrepreneurs, you will end up interacting with possibly policy makers, etc. So tapping into these platforms is not about immediate funding, not about, you know, meeting some immediate goal, but it's part of a very long-term strategy to keep expanding your network in an ecosystem where everyone here is passion driven, is socially conscious. So there is already an alignment of values where purpose, people, planet are more important than profit. So you want to expand, have as large a network in this ecosystem. Sankalp, I had already mentioned, is an event which gives a fantastic platform for people to come in, people in the segment to come and interact and leverage the power of contacts and the power of network.